Hello, my friends. Welcome to another episode of the Kindness and Happiness Connection podcast. We're so happy to have you join us on a weekly basis, where our goal is to share tips, insights, and practical guidance to help you grow and prosper. Good afternoon. I'm Randy McNeely, the Kindness Giver. I'm here with my colleague, Dr. Ilya Gorgoris, the Happiness Doctor, and we're here for another episode of the Kindness and Happiness Connection podcast. We also have a wonderful guest that Dr. Ilya is going to tell you a little bit more about her right now.
Thank you, Randy, and thank you, Christy, for being our guest today. I'm going to read your bio, and it's quite impressive. Christy Stout is the mother of six, count them, six amazing children, ages 9 to 20. She holds a Bachelor's of Science degree in Human Development from Brigham Young University and a Master's degree in Educational Innovation Technology and Entrepreneurship from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. As a learning science expert, Christy designed educational materials using the latest and best research and technology. Her passion is teaching, especially topics and lessons that encourage us to think deeply and take action to improve our lives. You know, just by that alone, you speak our language, Christy, right there. Christy has been an educator at a residential treatment center for youth, implemented a mentoring program at local elementary and middle schools, created a design studio curriculum for an alternative learning center, and worked in strategic partnerships for the State Educational Technology Directors Association. She's presently building the State Bright Movement, which we'll hear a lot more about, a community of spiritual, emotional, and mental health resources, sharing truths gathered by study and by faith. She's the co-host of the State Bright podcast, which I can tell you is an amazing podcast. Christy, it's great to have you on board.
Thank you. Thank you for those compliments. It's awesome to be here.
They're all true, my dear. They're all true.
So excited to have you here with us today, Christy. And, you know, like Ilya said, you're talking our language when you talk about the things that you're doing, teaching topics and lessons that encourage us to think deeply and takes action to improve our lives. And I wanted to just start out by asking you a simple question. This is obviously the Kindness and Happiness Connection podcast. You know, tell us about how your views on happiness and kindness have evolved in your lifetime.
Sure. I look back on my childhood and I think I was, and many of us potentially are, conditioned to believe that if we're not happy, that something is wrong. And I personally was trained to believe that sadness or anger were like the opposite of happiness, rather than differentiating that these are just different emotions, right? So I was trained that sadness or anger are bad, or at least that they're not good, and grew up with this very polarized view of how my day was going to be, if it was going to be a good day or a bad day based on how I was feeling. And so if I was happy, I was having a good day. And if I was anything else, anxious or sad or scared or angry or grumpy, I was having a bad day. And I think that polarization really impacted me as I grew into later on in my youth and into young adulthood. My mind would immediately go to whether or not it was a good day or a bad day. And I really wrestled with this idea of happiness. At very many times in my life, it just felt like it was this elusive dream to me. Like it couldn't be this stable, calming, peaceful emotion that kind of dwelt in me. It just felt like it was always elusive. And so through a series of challenges and deep personal reflection that I'll tell you a little bit more about, I learned that joy is really possible, not just for me, but for anyone, but that it also really requires a lot of hard work. And so as I've become an older adult, I would say, and raised children and raised a family and had desires for what I want for them, it's become very apparent to me that the work to have happiness is hand in hand with kindness, but also that on a day in and day out basis, I choose personally for myself how to manage those emotions and how to have an inner peace and joy that are lasting.
you know, sadness and anger and depression and frustration, these are just human emotions, very normal. We all have them. So the fact that you grew up thinking that one is good and the other one is bad did you a disservice, actually. I'm sure that's not what your environment wanted to do for you, but unfortunately, they did you a disservice rather than saying embrace all feelings.
Right. But it's been a wrestle against some of that conditioning, right? So to undo a lot of that conditioning and then set yourself on the right path to have more accurate beliefs, but also learn how to choose the thoughts you want to have around the different circumstances of your life, for sure.
What was the catalyst? I'm kind of curious, because typically in our life, there's a point that you never forget, that this becomes the catalyst for us to do the deeper work. And it usually comes out of a crisis. Like most people don't change, you know, when everything is going well. But was there a defining moment, like a catalyst in your life where you decided, you know, I need to dig deeper into, you know, the happiness and kindness and so on?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There were two things as I thought about this question. There were two things, really, honestly. One was a little bit more of a stage of longevity. So raising my kids, these six kids that came into my life, and feeling like I had dreams and aspirations for them, and wanting to impose those dreams and aspirations onto them. And then very quickly realizing, you know, they have their own dreams and aspirations. They have their own personalities. They're their own person. They have their own preferences. They're very emotional, up and down. And I would carry a lot of that weight of how they were feeling that day. I would carry a lot of that weight on me, that it was, you know, more or less my responsibility to make sure they were happy, they were having a good time, they had a good day, and all of these things. So you can see how my childhood kind of bled into my motherhood, right? And taking that angst and that responsibility on for everyone's emotions. So at some point I began to learn and understand that my relationships with each of my kids was strengthened when I allowed them to be their own person, to make their own decisions within reasonable boundaries, to give them freedom to make mistakes, and to show them kindness and love anyways, regardless of what they were doing or how they were behaving. And my relationships with them would be strained if I tried to control them or tell them what to do, if I would get angry, upset, or upset when they were just being kids and learning and growing. And so this basic one catalyst was understanding this basic idea that we can't control anyone but ourselves. We can't make anyone act or behave or do certain things or act a certain way. We can only manage ourselves. And so when I learned to adopt this, when I learned it and when I finally adopted it, it freed me from so much frustration.
I was going to tell you, there's a whole generation of parenting that hopefully doesn't exist as much anymore, but it used to, I know when we were raising kids, called the helicopter parenting, where basically parents were, you know, wanted to catch kids before they made any mistake, before they fell down, before they got hurt, before they scratched their knees or whatever, in order to protect them from feeling any kind of pain or adversity. And of course, you know, in the long term, they were doing their kids a disservice, because kids need to learn resilience and patience. And a lot of that happens when you fall on your face, actually.
you know?
And it's good for the kids to fall on their face, just like it is for us adults. So can you speak a little bit about that? I mean, you're bringing it up that, you know, this kind of trying to make sure everything is happy all the time, which is this unattainable task as a parent or as a human being, and how frustrating that leads both for you as a parent and for your kids.
Yes, I will say, when I finally put my finger on how I was feeling most of the time, the word was frustrated. And I really, it wasn't anything that they were doing. I had to take full responsibility for that, because often it was just assuming on myself their emotional state, right? So I wouldn't consider myself a helicopter parent as much as I would consider, you know, if someone was having a meltdown at the park because they didn't like the lunch I packed, then all of a sudden I'm taking on all that emotional responsibility and feeling badly that I didn't do the right thing or pack what they wanted. And that's just a small example, but that's a lot of emotional strain on a mother, on a person, to take on everyone else's emotions. So really teaching them that they are responsible for themselves and giving them, I do agree with you, giving them more freedom to fall on their face, but just being there as a support and loving and showing kindness regardless. You know, the words, oh, I'm really sorry that happened to you. What can I do to support you? Giving them the confidence that they're going to work through it themselves. Right. But you mentioned a crisis, and I did. That was really the catalyst that launched me, catapulted me into Stay Bright movement, and also a deeper work on discovering how to have joy and happiness in my life. And that was that I recently separated from my husband of 21 years. And I'm currently going through a divorce. And in the beginning of this, I noticed some of those same emotions. I felt really frustrated because I could only bring the relationship so far. I could only do so much with my own efforts. You know, I could only make, so to speak, the lunch that I thought the marriage needed. But once I realized that, again, I can only control myself. I can't control anyone else. I can only control my thoughts, my actions, my behaviors, is when I really got to work. And so this crisis, it absolutely was. It was very emotional. It was very difficult. It spun me into this, well, if I can find happiness in this big of a crisis, in this big of a situation that potentially could just completely take me down, then
or lift
then
you up though. I mean, that's the other possibility, or lift you up to greater heights than you've ever had before.
Right. But my thinking was, if I can figure out how to reframe my thinking accurately about this situation, about any situation, and choose peace and choose happiness and choose kindness outside of any circumstance, then I'm the one that's empowered to make those decisions for myself. And so in a nutshell, the catalyst that led me to this deep work on happiness and kindness is really the acknowledgement that I can manage me, and everyone else is responsible for themselves as well.
A perfect answer. Thank you.
Wow. And that's really profound, Christy. And we're so happy that you've been able to find your way to reframe how you're looking at things and how you're looking at life. What would you share with our audience? What are some of the tools that have helped you the most as you've worked to develop greater skills and space for happiness and kindness and work through this crisis to be able to get to where you are now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to speak to one tool in particular, and this is not new in the world of psychology or behavioral science world, and there's several variations of it, but it's the basic thought model. So when I first learned this many, many years ago, the way that it was described to me was that we have a trigger. We have something that happens. I know a lot of people think of it as a circumstance or a neutral fact that happens. So let's say we get into a car accident, we win the lottery, we drop a glass bowl on the floor, or a boyfriend or girlfriend breaks up with us. When you really think about this, these are all just factual events. They're just things that happen. And sometimes we choose them, sometimes we don't, sometimes they just happen. But there isn't an emotion assigned to these triggers yet. There isn't any emotion assigned to them. We are the ones that assign emotion to them by our thought. The second step of this thought model is what we think about the trigger or the circumstance.
You know, I think the example is, you know, when you say break up with a boyfriend or girlfriend, the thinking can be initially, oh, this is a catastrophe. How am I going to live without that person? Yeah. But in time, this could become, man, this was the biggest blessing in disguise, because if I hadn't broken up with that boyfriend, I wouldn't be now with the person that I love right now.
So that's right.
It changes, right? There's a navigation that takes place over time.
Exactly. And it really is a choice that we decide to think. So for instance, if we've been in a car accident, we can think, I can't believe this person just hit my car. What an idiot. If we win the lottery, we can think, this is the best day ever. If we break a glass, we may think, I'm so annoyed and stressed, I'm going to be late. Or if we get dumped, I'm so worthless, no one wants me. You get the idea. But we can also choose to think, you know, about the car accident, oh, well, I'm glad no one was hurt, and now I can get that really eco-friendly car that I've been wanting. If we win the lottery, which seems like it's a good thing, we can choose to think, this is terrible. I'm going to have to pay really high taxes now, and I'm going to have people borrowing money. With the, you know, breaking a glass bowl, we can choose to think, well, this is just not a big deal. It's just a life nuisance. I'm going to clean it up real quick. And like you said, Ilya, with the breakup, we can choose to think it's an opportunity to find someone that's a better fit for us. So these thoughts and what we choose to think directly impacts and creates the third part of the thought model, which is our emotions or how we feel about the circumstance. So our emotion comes about as a direct result of what we think, and we can choose to think anything we want. We can choose that. The emotions or feelings lead to the fourth part of the model, which is our behavior and actions. So for instance, if we believe that the person that just hit our car is an idiot, we could, you know, our behavior could reflect that. We could get out of the car yelling and screaming. But if we choose to think that we now have an opportunity to get the car we wanted, it changes the whole behavioral scenario. And as we know, these actions and behaviors create our life, right? We magnetize the good and kind and happy things towards us. And we can then live with peace and serenity and internal deep and abiding joy.
I mean, speaking of action, do you have some, you know, daily habits that you personally practice to bring you more kindness and happiness in your life that are, you know, no matter what happens, rain or shine, Christy, she's going to do those things on a daily basis. There's a consistency about them and they elevate your mood.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because I've heard this one my whole life, and you and I've talked about this, Elia, but taking knowledge or words that we hear or know and putting them into practice are two different things, right? So I've heard my entire life, gratitude, have gratitude. And I almost wish people would break this down into a more manageable, doable steps, right? Like have gratitude. What does that mean? Does it mean writing in a gratitude journal? Does it mean saying thank you out loud to X number of people? You know, breaking down the habit of expressing gratitude in a way that works for you.
Some people like to write it down in a journal. Not everybody does that. I mean, I've done that in the past, but there are other times when I just, if I talk to, to God, like I do sometimes, I express gratitude verbally or in my heart or in my mind. And sometimes I do it to people that I love and I care about and I'm truly grateful for. So there's no one way.
Exactly.
But as long as there's gratitude in your heart, I guess, and in your mind, and you think about it, that's part of who you are. You live life in gratitude. I think that contributes greatly to happiness.
Yeah. And I think what I'm saying is the word gratitude itself, unless we actively take a step to put it into action in our lives, it's just an idea, right? So for me, having a very concrete way that I show gratitude was helpful. And I do a daily prayer, and that includes, you know, a morning prayer of gratitude. And I do an evening of a gratitude, just a very quick gratitude journal of just one thing that I noticed in the day that I was thankful for that maybe wouldn't have come to the front of my mind if I hadn't been deliberate in thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I do is I set an intention for the day. So I really like to do yoga, and in many of those classes before we start, you set an intention for the class. And so I've gotten in the habit of setting an intention for my day. And
for
what
example,
I've noticed.
What's an example of that? Like when you say that.
Set an intention.
Yeah. Like what?
Sure. I am going to make sure that my children feel loved through physical touch. That may be an intention. And then it's an intention that I'm then thinking about throughout the day. My intention may be, I am going to outwardly respond with calm, kind words of affirmation, regardless of any circumstance that happens.
I love languages. I love it.
Yeah.
So really just deliberately having an intention for the day. And, you know, that changes for me every day, but it's something that is in the forefront of my mind that frames my actions for the day. And I guess the overall result for me has been an improvement over time, an improvement in habits, right? Breaking old bad habits and creating new ones.
It's really interesting listening to you talk about that, Christy, because you used two key words, deliberate and intentional. And you talked about breaking habits. If we want to create a habit, we have the ability and we have to take the action, like you talked about, to deliberately do something and have the intent to do that. And that's how we ingrain habits into our daily life, by deliberately taking intentional action. And so everything you've talked about is habit forming. And we can, the interesting thing is, with kindness and happiness, we can take every day, as we've already emphasized, deliberate and intentional actions to be kind, and thereby increase our happiness. Is every time we do something kind, we not only feel good inside ourselves, but we also bless other people's lives. And so we feel good because we've done something kind, and we feel good because we've seen the good effects that it has on other people. So great words, great thoughts there. Appreciate that.
And you'd be surprised, I think, how many people actually go from day to day without any intentional thinking or acting. They just exist. And
right.
Whichever way the wind is blowing, that's kind of they go, and they're, you know, unhappy and miserable, and they struggle and frustrated because they don't take that conscious decision, like you mentioned, think it through, express gratitude, have an intention for the day, and then live into that intention throughout the day, because that makes all the difference in the world. Basically, happiness, and it takes work. Finish your thought, Christy. Go ahead.
Okay. And then the one other thing that came to mind as a daily practice is self-care. And Ilya, we just talked about your new book and how that's the first step to navigating a crisis. It really is. I just want to quickly distinguish that it's not selfishness, and really make that distinction. For me, self-care is getting enough sleep. It's eating well. It's spending time with my Heavenly Father first thing in the morning and then throughout the day. It's moving my body and getting outdoors, and it's smiling and talking to strangers and putting brightness out into the world and spending quality time with my family. So those are the kinds of things that for me are self-care. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. As you think about it, when it comes to kindness, you know, there's a little song that we learned, I learned as a kid, you know, I want to be kind to everyone, for that is right, you see. So I say to myself, remember this, kindness begins with me. Self-care is about self-kindness. It really is. So, you know, we have to take our first relationship, our number one relationship is with ourselves, in the sense that we spend 100% of our time with ourselves. And if we're not taking care of ourselves mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually, we're going to have a really hard time taking care of anybody else or influencing anybody else or helping anybody else. So,
and yet it's the toughest thing. Self-care is not easy. Just because it's the first key to navigating a crisis, or it's really important in our lives, most people don't know how to do it, or they feel guilty. And I dare say, especially moms, if they take, you know, I'm going to go take a bubble bath, I don't care if they burn the house down, I just need some quiet time. I'm going to lock the bathroom door. I need some alone time. And they don't. And to do it without guilt, to do it without, and say, you know what, this is me taking care of myself. Because after an hour of that, I can come back out and take care of my six kids.
I would agree with you. If there's anything I could tell young moms, it would be to figure out how to provide self-care so that you can be a better mom. It's really hard to do, though. If you're one that carries guilt, you know, I would feel desperate to need, you know, a date night or something out in a way. And then I would leave, and then I would feel guilty about having a sitter at home. It was so mentally challenging, but, you know, practicing it and getting the right tools to be able to have self-care is healthy. It's very, very healthy.
You know, one thing about, I mean, help young moms is this, that, you know, kids sometimes need a time out from their parents. Do you ever consider that kids want their parents to go away so they can, they can have the house to themselves sometimes?
It's absolutely true.
It is true. So you're doing them a favor in some ways. Go away, go on your date night. And get out of the
house. Go on your date night and let us have a chance to just take responsibility for ourselves for a little while. That's another thing, you know, kids want the time to be able to take responsibility for themselves. So.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you mentioned a key thing there, Christy, distinguishing between self-care and selfishness. I'm kind of with Ilya on this, and it's not just women, but, you know, man, I've noticed my sweetheart, love her to death, and she is one of the kindest, sweetest, wonderful, most wonderful people on earth. She has a really, 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 really hard time taking time for herself or allowing other people to do things. Like, for example, she cooks dinner and things, and we have dinner helpers, but afterwards I say, honey, let me clean up the kitchen, let us take care of these things. But she has it so ingrained in her that she needs to start putting food away and needs to start doing these other things. It is like almost like pulling teeth trying to get her to come out of the kitchen and just let us do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting challenge.
I have a simple solution for that, which I implemented 30 years ago with my wife. We've been together for 30 years. I told her, look, I'm not one of those romantic Greeks that's ever going to cook for you. But every time you cook, I'm going to clean the kitchen. And that's our deal. She cooks, I clean. So as soon as dinner's over, I pick up everything. I put it away. I said, go away. or hang out with a guest if we have people over, because we like to entertain a lot, I'll take care of it. And when people come and want to help me clean up the kitchen, I'm like, get away from, this is my domain. I own this.
So that's great.
It's a partnership in some ways. That's what you do.
There you go. Anyway,
back, we want to hear about your movement.
Yeah, so what are your goals with the Stay Bright movement? You talked about that a little bit. You know, Elia brought that up in the intro when he was reading your bio. So tell us more about it.
Yeah, so a little over a year ago was probably, and I say a year ago is when I kind of made the decision I needed to change something in my marriage. I had been contemplating that for several months. And while I was making this massive decision or trying to gain truth around it and listen to the Spirit, I was reading anything I could get my hands on, listening to a Christian counselor who has a YouTube channel. And as I walked every day and listened to this counselor, I started to kind of put pieces together that over 21 years hadn't really been in my mind. And so I remember thinking, here I am, 42 years old, and how does everybody not have this information? This is critical information that would have been so helpful to me many years ago. And so I was simultaneously working on my own happiness and kindness. And I noticed that my life was starting to turn, and that happiness wasn't something that just crept in here and there and then disappeared. It was starting to stay longer. And I felt like I was able to grasp it and hold on to it. And it was becoming part of my being. So the inspiration with listening to this particular Christian counselor was that, hey, you know, I desperately want to get these skills and tools of kindness and happiness out to people as quickly as possible, as accessible as possible to as many people as possible. And I just thought I was going to explode with joy, knowing that I had this power over my own ability to have joy in my life. And so I felt desperate to share it with people. So I ended up talking to my friend Angie and we threw out some different ideas. I really love academic journals. I love research. I love data. And I wanted to take a very spiritual approach to it. So in the end, she and I decided to have what we call a two-week topic. We take a topic that we're interested in, that maybe we even need help with, or that is kind of the buzz on social media. And we'll take that topic and we break it down. The first week is all research-based academic journals and studies. And then we have a week of scriptural based. So pulling truths from prophets and spiritual leaders of all faiths and scripture, because truth is truth. And we seek the truth and we want to share that truth with others. And I could see how much I struggled in my youth and in my young adult years. And I really have a passion for designing learning materials that are easy to implement and easy to use. And I especially feel an affinity towards youth and think of the pain that could be spared them if they're able to not only understand, but really put into action some of these principles and tools. And so we do break down each episode into usable tools and skills and give you little tips on how to adopt them immediately. But, you know, our long-term goal with Stay Bright Movement, I'll just share this. This will give you a little vision of what it is. While we were trying to think of the name for this thing that we wanted to create, right? The podcast is just one aspect of that, but really it involves social media. We would love to have workshops that are local, that are online. We would love to have people contribute to, you know, share their story and share their tools and skills. We would love to do conferences. That's kind of our bigger dreams. But I will say this, as we were naming or trying to name Stay Bright, my littlest daughter had written a letter to her sister, who was a missionary at the time. And she showed me this letter before I mailed it. And she just had this one little phrase on it that said, "Stay bright." And I almost came out of my skin, because we had thought of maybe 30 other names, possible names. And I thought, that is what we are trying to do, because Angie and I both believe that, you know, we're all born with this light, with this innate brightness. you know, as infants, we're born a few weeks in smiling, and yet life gets the best of us. Life gets hard. We're conditioned through our childhood for, you know, the fallacies of our parents who had things come from their parents, and circumstances that are challenging and hard events and things that break us down and have the potential to wear us down. And that light starts to get dimmer and dimmer. And if we aren't actively working for kindness and happiness, it can go out, you know, or it can get very, very dim. And so the idea of staying bright with what we're innately given, I personally believe from our Savior Jesus Christ, you know, we have to work to keep that light very bright and very burning. And the good news, Randy, like you mentioned earlier, is when we do, it spreads, right? We share that with the world. So our goals really, in a nutshell, is to help people stay bright, to help them see the light that's already within them, and to have the tools they need to stay that way.
You know, they say out of the mouth of babes comes great truth. And your little daughter, when she wrote Stay Bright, that is it's a fantastic title. But more importantly, I know that you live it. And it's not just a great name for a podcast. The Stay Bright movement, I think, is only going to continue to grow and grow and spread light and lightness and happiness and kindness around the world. So congratulations. It's a fantastic program. To all our listeners, I would highly recommend that you follow the Stay Bright movement, the podcasts, and you will be blessed because of it.
Yeah, we just believe so much in the collective wisdom and knowledge of our listeners, from people out there who've, you know, you can read a study about XYZ, but when you've lived XYZ, you're the one, you know, you're the person who can speak to that. What did you do to come out of those trenches? How did you find joy through the struggles? You know, what changed in your life, and what would you do differently next time? How would you help someone who's at point A, now that you're at point Z, what would you tell them? And we all have this incredible amount of experience and love and wisdom that we can share. So why not tap into it? Why not share it? Why not, you know, help? We're speaking a new language when we've gone through a trial. We're speaking a language we didn't have before we went through that trial. And we can connect with others in that way for sure.
No, this is fantastic. Thank you, Christy. We only got a couple of minutes left. What are your two or three tips or takeaways that you'd like to share with our audience today?
Sure. Some of them, I'll just repeat a couple of things we've talked about. But my first really is that happiness is work. It is work. You build it. We each choose to build it. So we have to be ready to take action. And I was even thinking, you know, sometimes it feels like an uphill battle, because I think sometimes it is, especially if we're working to unlearn ineffective strategies that we've been conditioned, or patterns that we've developed. It is like an uphill battle. I think second, I just love you guys' subtitle, kindness and happiness. You can't have one without the other. I can't think of a greater truth. These two things really are connected. So maybe if taking action steps just feels too hard to have more happiness in your life, just start with being kind as often and as immediately as possible, and it will change you. And then I think the third thing is really to please don't give up, to keep actively trying to have more happiness in your life. I am a living testimony that it can be done. Like I said in the beginning, there really were days when I thought, I just don't know if happiness is ever going to be consistently in my life. I just think that it's just too frustrating and too hard. But just believe that it's possible, and look for improvements, not overnight overhauls. It's a process, and that's okay. We have a lifetime and longer, so a little bit at a time.
Thank you so much, Christy, for joining us today, and thank you to our audience for joining us. We appreciate you. We invite you to stay tuned and join us again next week, where we're going to be talking with the amazing Dr. Marilyn A. Scott. She's a feel better consultant. She helps people to de-stress and to have more pizzazz in their lives. And she is the author of a wonderful book called Be Amazing: Powerful Results Are Just a Leap Away. So we invite you to stay tuned and listen in next week. It's going to be another great episode of the Kindness and Happiness Connection podcast. In the meantime, have a great rest of your weekend and a wonderful upcoming week. If you have suggestions for discussion topics, please visit anchor.fm/kindness-happiness and follow the instructions in our show description. Remember, kindness is a choice.
And happiness is a choice always. So choose to be kind and choose to be happy today, and good things will follow.
Have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you.